we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike and Oscar, and we have a couple more horror, scary-type things left to do.
Yes, we do.
Before the clock hits midnight, and I guess in this case we would turn, like, not into a pumpkin, we would turn back from being a pumpkin, because we've been a pumpkin all along.
We've been a pumpkin head.
Pumpkin
we've been
head. Very good.
A pumpkin-masked
yes.
children.
Right, and, then we get to go back to being movie Oscars critics once November 1st comes around, but
however,
until then...
We do a lot of horror movies, too. So if
we
you're
did.
Coming in
One
for
of our
horror
favorite
stuff,
genres, yeah.
We did Hereditary, A Quiet Place, Cloverfield Paradox, just for shits and giggles. We do retrospectives, and we hit on Silence of the Lambs and horror movies there, and Fatal Attraction and stuff.
Good points. And between the two of us last year in our covering the Oscars, we both had a horror movie as our first and second place for Best Picture.
Absolutely.
So.
Get Out. And our first episode was Get Out and It-centric. That's
yes.
why It Begins.
Yeah, that's very true. So we are – that's a good point. We do try to keep it always – in our minds, it is one of our favorite genres.
I was thinking
like
about it on the way here. I was like, you know, all these horror people are coming from us, to us from all the horror for Halloween month, but we like do this thing year round. I mean, we got Overlord and in the Apocalypse as possible movie events that we're going to do.
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, but it's kind of a renaissance for the entire genre, too.
Yes.
I mean, slashers are on the swing up. We're going to talk about that this
yes.
episode. And the whole, there's more care because fans are getting in control of these properties that were raised on these horror properties. And so there's more care going into them rather than just turning them into out and making money off them. And we're going to talk about that, but yes, this is, instead of a Hollywood hot take today, we're doing a horror hot takes. It's going to be a lot of horror genre and horror movie industry news,
yes.
Kind of our hot takes instead of our Hollywood hot takes that we do every couple months. We're going to be changing our shtick and our approach to that completely within the next couple weeks, but we'll get more into that as the time comes. But for now, prior to Halloween, one more stop, second to last stop on the horror train for the Halloween season, at least. We're going to do horror hot takes. This is Mike, and Oscar. I am Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here, and yes, I'm excited. A lot of big stories that we've been following all along. Like I said, we integrate all this horror stuff in year-round for sure. So.
I high-five myself once a day about the Halloween numbers, so
yeah.
Yes, that's where we
that's
are
where we
starting.
Begin. So the domestic opening weekend total was around $77
million
to Box Office Mojo. It is the second largest October opening of all time, second to Venom a couple weeks earlier.
Yeah, come on, man. You couldn't, like, hold off your debut for November.
You know, the Halloween folks didn't employ the Gaga monsters, and therefore it's second.
Isn't that crazy, though, that, like, the Gaga monsters might have actually ended up helping the Venom box office some?
The Gaga monsters do what they do, and they can't control the consequences. Like, she could win.
They wield power they do not know the benefits of.
It's a blessing and a curse, their power. So
I should work that into a superhero movie.
True. Second largest R-rated opening ever for Halloween here. Above above The Nun's $53 million, below its $123
million. It was in a different stratosphere, yeah.
And you said it before we recorded today, the biggest opening ever for a 55-year-old-plus female lead.
It deserves to be, too. If it's going to be someone, it should be the original Laurie Strode.
More on her in a minute. B-plus cinema score. Or a little later, I think. She's been casted. This got her another job. And anyway, by the way, A Star is Born earned $40 million globally that last week. So the monsters over Venom. Venom was third. Star is Born was second. That was interesting.
That momentum, it's starting to hit speed bumps. A Star is Born anyway, before he's diving all the way to Halloween. It's starting to hit speed bumps, but it's still a sustain.
Oh,
it's going to
make
success.
Huge money.
Yeah.
Bloody Disgusting article talked about $91 million worldwide weekend total, already the highest grossing film in the history of the Halloween franchise.
We did the 8-part MMO Does Halloween series, and at the end of every box office section, we said, well, it's fourth place in the series now, but it's probably going to be fifth soon. It's third place in the series. Now, it's probably going to, because this one, by all projections and all accounts, was going to be, pardon the pun, but a monster.
And after 7 days, or 8 days if you count the Thursday previews, as of last night, the Halloween had grossed a total of $106.7 million.
Da-da-da-da!
Big money.
$100 million already.
Here's the Jamie Lee Curtis note. I did put it up here. She got a new job in Rian Johnson's contemporary murder mystery, Knives Out. A cool title. Rian Johnson from Brick. Last Jedi.
It's awesome. Rian Johnson, obviously, we've gushed about Last Jedi. We happen to be huge fans of how he handled that property.
Mm-hmm.
We're big fans of his in general, big fans of Jamie Lee Curtis's, obviously. It's so funny to me how Jamie Lee Curtis, like, always tiptoes the typecasting of being that final girl. She says she doesn't like slasher movies.
Right.
She doesn't personally enjoy horror movies, but she's always there. That's what she's known for, and she still embraces it in a way. It's such a weird balancing act. But
it's like us with cookies, you know? maybe I'll have a little bit. I'll have half. I'll have half a cookie, and I won't eat the other half.
Lay
later,
off
I promise.
Me, I'm starving.
Maybe just one fry. Yeah, I agree. I agree with all of that analogy I just made. Anyway,
especially that we love cookies.
Yes. Box office projections for this weekend. It's second in its run. $35 million projection, and it's supposed to top the weekend here.
So 2 weeks, it's going to make about $150 million worldwide?
Yeah.
God damn, that's a lot of money for this movie, isn't it?
That's good money.
For a slasher movie?
$10 million budget?
Yeah.
Blumhouse.
$10 million. Yeah, it's going to make 15 times its budget, its production budget in the first 2 weeks. That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
I think David Gordon Green and Danny McBride might be asked back.
Yeah, I think so. That's coming in a second. So now IMAX is starting to show it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. They're doing a 1 week only, and that's probably where this bump or this sustained revenue is going to be. They said for 1 week, Halloween week, here it is. You guys asked for it. I don't know if this was necessarily shot with the IMAX cameras or if this was going to be just rendered after the fact.
Right.
So that it makes me think that it's going to be rendered after the fact, which is why they're only doing the 1 week
thing.
Yeah,
the Slash Film guys were saying maybe one sequence had some IMAX cameras.
Right, it makes sense because otherwise why didn't they just release it from the get-go? So but I think it'll help the numbers. I'm definitely going to go see it.
The screen is bigger. I will like it. I even like the AMC Limax. I really do. I recognize that it's a Limax. I've been to New York City and seen the actual IMAX theaters before. They're enormous.
Sure.
It's like looking up at a mountain.
Yeah.
But I enjoy the larger screen. And yeah, let me know when you're going. I'll probably go.
Absolutely.
I would see fucking Gosford Park in IMAX.
I would not.
Okay. Halloween sequel talks have
been... I would not see Gosford Park again. Period.
I do not like green eggs and ham. Halloween sequel talks have begun with Danny McBride, and we assume David Gordon Green and the other guy there, but
Jamie
we don't
Lee
know.
Curtis is on record saying, I'm coming back if David Gordon Green's back. She said, if he wants to do a sequel to this one, I will do it, but only if he's handling the property.
Slash Film article said he and other writers, Danny McBride and other writers, have been asked to figure out where the franchise can go from here. Here is the quote from McBride. We definitely have ideas of what we would do. We have thoughts and ideas of what we could possibly do, but we hadn't invested a ton of time on them. But now we've been asked to figure it out, and there are definitely talks on whether we will do more of them, and we're trying to just see what best makes sense.
This is something we hit on in the non-spoiler half of our Halloween 2018 review. They, in a lot of interviews that Danny McBride, David Gordon Green did, they said they approached this as a two-parter originally.
Yes.
And then they kind of backed off and thought that was too advanced and too overreaching. They wanted to just make sure they got the first one right before
now,
they worried about
the
second
one. Here's
what part.
I wonder. David Gordon Green's got a couple projects slated already that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he may not be able to do it just because he's so prolific. He's already got a TV series and two movies coming out. He's got Cronkite. He's got the Emily Dickinson TV series.
Both seem
he's got
to be
Friday
long,
Night movie.
Yeah, both seem to be kind of longstanding passion projects before Friday Night Lights is even talked about, yeah.
So McBride, it would make sense that he can come back, and they're going to want to churn this sequel out relatively quick,
are
Blumhouse.
You,
and Happy Death Day is coming out a year
so
later.
So I need to kidnap David Gordon Green is what you're
we
saying.
We do need...
Because
we,
this needs to happen.
Yeah, we need to do this.
Right, okay, good. No, you're on board then.
Yeah, I'm in. I was in before you even mentioned it.
This was you giving out the
I was
plot.
Like, curling the rope around my shoulder. So yes, I love David Gordon Green coming back, but I don't know if his busy schedule is going to allow for it.
What do you think the shelf life is on this? I mean, we're going to have a basically 2 years, and it seems to have just as much momentum for a part two.
True. I just know what Blumhouse likes to do. If they get a franchise they love, they're coming
out
yearly
out,
or every other year at the latest. So.
Then again, this has to be one of the bigger money makers for Blumhouse's history anyway. So
the biggest,
right?
I mean, I can't imagine they had bigger other than
was
maybe.
Was it Blumhouse? I think it was Blumhouse.
Oh, it was Blumhouse
then?
Yeah,
I think so.
No, it was Sony. Blumhouse was like, well, that was a 25 million.
Oh, yep,
budget.
Yep.
We don't really go in for $25 million budgets. And
so, yeah, this might be the biggest one ever. So I would think maybe they're going to handle it with respect, or maybe the other side of that coin is you're right. Maybe they want to get to it quick to just strike while the iron's hot. I hope they give it its due, and I hope David Gordon Green does come back, obviously.
Hopefully. We'll see. And Jamie Lee Curtis. And I hope she doesn't leave that as an ultimatum, because I want her back either way.
I would love it, but yeah. I would also like her to dangle that carrot and say, hey, I'll come back if David comes back. Bring okay. David back. Bring David back.
Negotiating. So,
yeah.
Posturing.
Right.
Is that what that is? Did I get those words right?
I've never been familiar with the terms.
All right, Mike. So a Suspiria prequel.
We don't even have the new movie yet. But yes, we just did a retrospective of the 1977 Dario Argento classic. That's available for you to listen to now if you have not yet. We're going to review the Luca Guadagnino remake, reimagining, re-whatever, reboot. Once it comes to Connecticut theaters, the release date is supposed to be this week coming up, but it's not going to come to us this week, so we'll probably won't get to it for another week or so at least.
We're waiting for it.
The Luca quote from BloodyDisgusting.com about the prequel and the possibility of a prequel after his sequel, remake, reboot is going to come out.
Now, are you going to use the Super Mario Italian guy language?
I think I've murdered the Italian language too much.
Because,
listen,
Luca has the Super Mario.
He does.
I'm an Italian.
He does.
I'm very Italian, and so I could say it. But he talks like Super
and
Mario.
And watching him in interviews, it's just like, imagine that voice yelling at you for direction on set.
Great. I would always smile. No matter what. I love
he's one of your people, yeah. I have this image in my mind. So that answers your question. No accent for me. I have this image in my mind. I have this image in my mind of Helena Marcos in solitude in the year 1212 in Scotland or in Spain, Guadagnino told the site, quote, wandering through a village and trying to find a way on how she can manipulate the women of the village. Now, Helena Marcos is kind of the big bad witch that we hit on if you go back and listen to our Suspiria review. Yep. She's the big bad witch that's kind of behind the scenes of this whole thing and how this all comes
true
to be.
But here's the thing, Mike. Did Luca see the box office for Mother? If he's making a Darren Aronofsky kind of film here, that shock and awe picture that's may disappoint some people with how fucking batshit crazy it is, that's probably not going to make humongous box office. He got a $20 million budget here. That means he's got to make, what, 60 to make a profit?
We just talked about how Halloween did 150 in 2 weeks. I mean, it's there, especially, right? People love movies of the holiday. Like,
sure.
Any Christmas movie gets a huge bump on Christmas. Any Halloween horror movie, they're just clamoring for a big horror movie. So this one comes out in some places before Halloween. I think that's really going to benefit it. That probably is an obvious statement. But there's also Oscar buzz about this remake.
True.
So I think there's enough curiosity there where I don't think 60, 70 million is out of the realm of possibility. Well, for
number
this.
One, I'm always worried about, you know, a movie that's fringe Oscar getting a platform release with a big budget like 20 million.
Fair.
I'm always worried for those movies. I'm worried even more because everybody's comparing it to Mother, which was a disappointment blockbuster-wise. And I think that Luca Guadagnino should get bigger budgets, and I'm worried because I don't want to see him only get this one and never get another one again. After this one makes...
Either way, this seems like it's going to be a critical success, right? So it may not be a moneymaker. Maybe even if it doesn't make money, maybe there's enough to carry it on where he gets the chance to expand the universe.
I'm rooting for it, but it's also 2.5 hours. It
sure is.
That's another red flag.
And it's wild. Money. From all the early reviews we've heard and read online, it's a trip. Our friend Matt Negley of Next Best Picture has already seen it a couple times and said he just can't wrap his head around what the WTF is going on.
Really?
So that's out there for you to read at Next Best Picture. So... I'm excited. I think we're both excited.
Well, we'll see it three times a piece. So.
And we'll see if the prequel, sequel, whatever. I just think it's funny how the director, how many times has the director come out and said, yeah, I'm here, I'm waiting for you guys to call before the movie's even released. I think that's funny.
True. So we have some Oscar race updates for you on some of the OSP reviewed 2018.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, 2018 horror films that we've already done, like we said. So we have a track record for horror films in our podcast history. A Quiet Place was one of those. We did it in April. So April news was Christopher Tapley at Variety saying, quote, it doesn't have the social underpinnings of a Del Toro or Jordan Peele movie from last year, but it does have, quote, craft to spare.
Yeah, okay. I get it. That's kind of like, it was a nice picture when it first came out, right? It had ingenuity behind it. It was creative. It was a weird way to tell a story that hadn't really been done before.
This was an interesting review for us because it was a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy because we didn't like the plot holes in the trailers, and those plot holes manifested and they festered. And then when the movie
really
came out,
yeah,
we didn't get them addressed to our liking. Even though I think we're both positive about the movie, we didn't love it. We really liked it. I think back to the movie, and I bumped the grade up just on not seeing it again. And I think if I'd seen it again, I would be more appreciative of it. I still don't think it. I don't know if it's a great movie. I don't think it's a great movie. But what do you,
it's,
you say?
I don't think it is either. But we had. I mean, Will. I had this conversation with Will Mavity and our friends at Feeling Film recently. Mm-hmm. It currently sits at least on. I can't understand the push for it right now. It has all momentum in the world for a couple categories. And when we left the theater in our review, I thought in my headspace, oh, this is a nice horror movie.
Right.
This is a very nice... It's,
go make some money. Right. Have fun.
Exactly. And now it's like it occupies the final front runner spot in Feinberg's forecast. And then all the other awards it's being talked about. Pat Feinberg wrote about the Oscar push back in July and signified the term, quote, elevated horror flick. So perhaps recognizing that it's a secret to convincing Academy members to back a horror film is to emphasize that it has the subtext with real world applicability. There is a lot of subtext within the movie. There
sure.
is... highlighting disabilities and how they use for strengths, and that's always a nice note to end on. But I want to talk about some of the forecasts and where he lands on this.
Yes, Entertainment Weekly lists it as a contender as of September, the last month. Scott Mance at Collider thinks, like many pundits, that it's a definite contender for the sound categories, and we've said this all along.
Duh.
No
right.
surprise.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm in there.
But he also says original screenplay, best actress, best director, and best picture are all in play and are being campaigned for. Now, we'll talk about that in a minute and update you on what they're going for. But Mance asks a lot of good questions in this article at Collider, and he compares it to Get Out, where it stacks up, where it doesn't. So he's very charitable at certain levels, but he knows it's not Get Out.
We're on record, and we've said in our review of Get Out, and we loved Get Out. It was probably our favorite movie of 2017 film year, if not this decade.
Right.
We said that for a horror movie to be like Oscar-y,
right,
it's got to just explain. It's got to transcend the genre. It's
yeah.
got to transcend movie making in general. It's got to be something basically borderline legendary.
And almost a genre bender like Silence of the Lambs.
It's more right.
thriller than horror movie. Even the horror movie elements are probably the
right.
most memorable. But yes, you know, Jordan Peele's Get Out is the satire of our time.
Right.
It's one of those time capsule pieces.
So what am I missing here?
Yeah, this one, it could be about politics. It could be about, you know, I don't know.
Everybody
parenting.
Loves Krasinski and Blunt.
We talked about the themes of it. Go back. I don't even remember what we talked about. We kind of gave some theories.
Yeah, I just, all right. So it's listed as a front runner for Feinberg's
in
latest
forecast.
In his top
10.
And it's in his top. So if the year ended today and the Academy was Scott Feinberg.
The super pundit.
It makes the best picture cut.
If I had to put money down, I would say what Scott Feinberg says.
Always.
Right?
He's the one most tuned in. He's always very close, if not right on with a lot of these.
True.
Best director, he has Krasinski listed as a major threat. I will say, I was thinking about this. Gun to your head, if you could only find room for one, would you go Krasinski or Bradley Cooper for their jobs here?
That's a tough one, because I do like the directorial job.
I do too.
That he did. I don't think he's top 10, though. That's the point. So I would say probably Cooper. I don't love either one of their directorial jobs.
I
would vote Bo Burnham, Ari Aster. I would vote
I would do Burnham, too. That's where I would land on that.
Both of these.
Best actor, he has Krasinski in his possibility category. Okay. And best actress, Emily Blunt, is listed in the major threats.
So they are now going to campaign for supporting actor and actress. That's the latest news from a Slash Film article. I thought that was fascinating. So this came out after Feinberg's recent forecast number 3, and now Blunt and Krasinski are going for the supporting Millicent Simmons supporting category. And I wonder,
I think
Michael,
that hurts Millicent Simmons' chances. I don't
she's
like
going
that
against
her. Yeah.
Yeah, Emily Blunt, who, you know, by all accounts, by this Slash Film article in particular, they think. And they argue that Emily Blunt stole the movie in terms of performances, even more than John Krasinski.
Sure.
We agreed with that.
Yeah.
We agreed she had the best chance. And we were considering her in the lead actress category. Now, she is also going to be in the lead actress category for Mary Poppins Returns.
Cannibalization, yep.
She's working on this particular project, A Quiet Place, with her husband, John Krasinski, who's, you know, buddy-buddy with all the studio heads.
Mm-hmm.
Are they helping her out? She's a puncher's chance, long shot for acting in A Quiet Place. Are they helping her out with Mary Poppins Returns by focusing the Academy's eyes on one performance in that one category?
When I saw that the two of them, Blunt and Krasinski, were going to be running as supportings, I was very surprised. And it also was like, my question inherently was like, oh, so the monster was the main person in that movie? Like, right. I know it doesn't mean anything. It's apropos of nothing. But
yes.
I do think there's some kind of political gamesmanship going on here, to answer your question more directly. I can't wrap my head around what it exactly means, because to me, I can't even get to the place where I take them as threats to the throne right now. And sure. And I could be totally off base and that'd be fine. I loved them both. I thought the movie was fine. We were high on the movie as it was.
Definitely.
But man, an Oscar contender for Best Picture, those two performances for supporting and supporting, whew, I just didn't get there.
It's such a stark contrast from Jordan Peele's Get Out. It's not on the level of Jordan Peele's Get Out.
No, not at all. It's a good horror. Story-wise, it's a really good horror movie.
Yeah, story-wise, it's not there.
Yeah, I don't see it. But again, hey, we've been wrong before. Wouldn't be the first or last time, that's for sure. And I'll say one last thing about Emily Blunt and her chances here. The fact that she has so much momentum coming off a horror movie, stealing the show, being the one everyone focuses on, and that Toni Collette has essentially zero momentum off of what we both think and what I think any objective viewer would think was a borderline legendary performance in Hereditary.
We've called it an all-timer.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest ever for a horror movie, certainly. Who knows in Best Actress lore, but it blows my mind how she does not part. We did a Hereditary Oscar Sprint Profile, non-spoiler and spoiler section in episode 75 and 77. Check that out. Ari Aster was the director of Hereditary, so leading up here and just going seamlessly into different topics because you wrote a great copy here and I just read them. What do we have for Hereditary's Oscar update, Michael?
So back in June, there was an article from Collider and there's an article from IndieWire talking about her chances. The Collider article offered a lot of pros and cons. I'll emphasize the pros here. Critical credibility. All the critics loved her. Box office, it's a huge hit for A24. A24 has earned the respect of the Academy now. They can campaign. They're a bona fide independent studio that people respect. Toni Collette has already been nominated for a quote-unquote elevated horror movie performance in The Sixth Sense. So a lot of pros for this movie. You'll wonder if the timing and everything screwed it up. If it came out too early, and then it came out on video too early, and
I'm hoping that we're just prisoners of the moment, and that we take a step back and say, hey, this is still October. By time November and December, when those deadlines for nominations, voting nominations come, there's going to be a re-push. That's what I'm hopeful for.
We're waiting for it.
Forbes and Tim Amos say A Quiet Place is a long shot for Best Picture, and Toni Collette is a long shot for Best Actress. I don't get it. Joey Nolfi at Entertainment Weekly says that if they gave the award for, quote, scaring the ever-living hell out of people, Toni Collette and Hereditary would get a ton of nominations, and also says that critical buzz could propel Toni Collette to a nomination. We seem to be so backwards with The Quiet Place and Hereditary and Toni Collette versus Emily Blunt, as far as our takes compared to what these major critics say, I want nothing more than for us to be right so I can thumb my nose at everyone per usual.
However, I just looking back at it, to play devil's advocate to ourselves, you know, arm's length now. We're backed away. We're looking at them both in a later profile after reviewing them months ago. A Quiet Place is much more palatable to a wider audience, to a wider Academy. It's got the narratives behind it, right?
Yes.
We mentioned some of this.
But wouldn't that lend itself to giving more credence to Collette's performance? Because she is the reason you feel so uneasy with a lot of those scenes.
You're a very good lawyer. And you're. I like how you make counterarguments. I don't know. I just think
I think that's totally true. And it's a much more relatable story, too. Parents going above and beyond doing anything they want. Yeah, I get it.
It's an archetypal story where in the cult of whatever his name, who shall not be named.
Paimon, yeah.
You mentioned him, Michael. No. But yeah, I mean, that other movie is very, you know, specific and it's all in metaphor. And it's like David Lynch versus a Steven Spielberg horror movie that
it is. It's a good point. I have faith in the diversified Academy is what I will hold out hope saying until I see that she's not nominated.
We're rooting for it. One continuation story here is that Ari Aster is set to scare the hell out of us next summer with an A24 Vacation Gone Terribly Wrong horror film starring Florence Pugh from Lady Macbeth, Will Poulter recently in Detroit, and Jack Rayner. Here's the premise. Quote, couple that travels to Sweden to visit their friend's rural hometown for its fabled Midsummer Festival. What begins as an idyllic retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult.
Does Ari Aster have something he needs to tell us?
Yes.
Was he raised in a, let's call it, commune?
But there's a bunch of horror films that are coming out over the next year. We previewed a lot of them. I am super excited for this one, Michael. I just learned of this.
This Ari Aster one?
You're saying A24 is putting big money behind Ari Aster's follow-up. It's not a Hereditary sequel or anything like
that.
No,
it's not.
We don't know. We don't think. Maybe they'll pull something on us, which
is interesting. And they pivoted quickly to it. Like they did eschew any kind of Academy or Oscars push, award season push, and their next big project that they pushed out and made mention of and was marketing was this Ari Aster film. So Do they think that the best Oscar chance they have for this year is Ari Aster and not Toni Collette? I'm just wondering behind the scenes stuff. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know.
I'm sure people respect him. I'm sure the Academy
respects
his debut here. We gushed over his directorial work, his writing. I wouldn't begrudge him a writing category Oscar. I mean, is that original screenplay a little more possible than Best Actress, which we all said is loaded.
Big year.
Maybe that is where they have.
Maybe
their best
it is.
Chance.
Yeah,
so
could be. Could
you're
be.
Right. You know, again, they time all this news. They have shit in the fire for a long time. They pull it out of the fire at certain times for certain reasons.
Yep. You're absolutely right. I love the chess match of it all.
Yes.
The trying to stay one step ahead. I really do. It really tickles my fancy. How gross is that? All right, let's talk about some some other horror movie news, borderline horror movie news, however you want to talk this. The Joker cast their Alfred and their young Bruce Wayne. This all comes from a Slash Film article, the Joker movie, the Joaquin Phoenix one, that is basically just being filmed in the public eye.
Right.
I feel like we get stills and updates about this on set every week.
It's a bit of a strange casting because of Douglas Hodge. He's not the typical Alfred-looking guy, I would say.
No, but I didn't think Jeremy Irons was an Alfred type character either.
This guy's the total opposite of Jeremy Irons.
So maybe Alfred is just a state of mind more so than it is a butler anymore.
Maybe. Dante Pereira Olsen cast as the kid, fine. I mean, I think everybody is a little annoyed with the Alfred casting because this guy's a character actor in a million things, and he's just doesn't seem like that British butler.
Right. Fair. And I will say also, not the one I focused on when I heard this news, because when I heard they casted a young Bruce Wayne for the Joker movie, the Slash Film article, it's written by Ben Pearson, it's a really good article. It delves into what he thinks is going on here, and he's postulates that if this is a Joker origin story movie, which means that he thinks they're basically doing the retelling of the Killing Joke, which is how the comic strip, the comic storyline, how the Joker came to be. If that's the case, there's no need for a young Bruce Wayne. Why are they casting a young Bruce Wayne? It was all adult-oriented. It doesn't start as kids. They didn't start crossovers. I don't know where he fits in.
I saw the movie The Killing Joke, and there was a Batman in it. So what are we doing?
I don't know. That's why I mean. I don't understand. I have young Joker here. That's my mistake. But I don't understand why we need a young Bruce Wayne here. I don't see where it fits the universe. I'm very apprehensive about that.
Look, I hope it's a short flashback. They have it in one scene. Maybe it's an Easter egg type thing. Oh, where Alfred and talks to a kid named Bruce. I don't want a big, long origin story flashbacks, a series of flashbacks. I don't want any of that. Now, we heard of this being shot a couple weeks ago with Joaquin Phoenix romping around, photos being released, everybody hating it and then loving it.
Right.
Us most of all. we podcasted about it.
Yes.
And now we have weeks later, like 2 weeks later, Alfred and Bruce. So are they just like adding this scene, or they didn't care to cast it too early, or they didn't leak out the news till late? I mean, bottom line is it can't be that big of a part of the movie if they're just like peppering it in mid-production.
And they're not Lex Luthor and Superman, by the way. Like, they're not childhood friends, especially in the comic book lore, I know for sure. So don't know what's going on here. I'm a little worried.
I worry that DC, you know, makes the same mistakes over and over and over again.
I'll give them a chance.
They just got to learn from their mistakes. Please, DC,
nice.
Please.
Yeah, no, seriously. Just give the entire company to Gal Gadot and Margot Robbie.
True.
Have it be the woman superheroes.
Do it. And then have them clash.
Run with it. Yes, exactly.
Have them clash.
Exactly.
That movie, we're seeing that
That's
movie.
Money. Easy.
All right, another movie that we're going to see is It Chapter 2, Michael. I had fun researching this one. Sci-Fi Wire had an awesome article about everything we know about It Chapter 2 so far. I'm going to summarize that. Love those guys. Sci-Fi Wire. Again, so we know from the novel and the movie that Pennywise returns to Derry every 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get a major flash forward. We knew this
yes.
from the book, from the last movie. But even in Stephen King's story, those two plot lines are like 50s and 60s in the book. We're going to flash forward to the 80s, which makes sense with the 27 years thing.
I'm on board with that,
yes. So they're more about the 27 years thing than they are like how the book did it. So we know the new cast, X-Men's James McAvoy.
Love it.
Zero Dark Thirty's Jessica Chastain.
Love it.
SNL and Barry comedian Bill Hader.
Love it.
And then a lot of lookalikes and solid actors. Jay Ryan, James Ransone, Andy Bean, Isaiah Mustafa. They're the Losers Club 27 years later.
I would like Isaiah Mustafa in this movie to still just play the role of the Old Spice guy he is in the commercial. Look at your man. Now look at me.
It's a great voice. He was in the NFL, I just learned. He was
an ex-NFL
player.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, he's
he
got
looks
some,
the part of that, yes.
Well, the younger kid was athletic, and we were saying, like, Jordan Peele.
Yeah, I think that was everyone's wet dream
Jordan
there.
Jordan Peele is like us. He's not that athletic.
He's nesting comfortably into his director's look, yes.
Exactly. So Bill Skarsgård is coming back to play Pennywise. We're happy about that.
Of course. He was great.
Now, this article contains a bunch of spoiler stuff about scenes we'll get in Chapter 2 that we didn't get in 1 and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to get into that. But
me
I do,
either, and I've been trying to make a conscious effort to avoid anything yeah. related to it. So
I do want to say that principal photography began in June of this year, end of June. It supposedly ends October 20th. Now, this is an old article. Let's see what happens. So, Michael, we may be doing a trailer breakdown of this Rosemary's Baby pretty soon.
I see what you did there.
Yes. So we'll definitely do a movie event when this drops next year, September 6th. This will kick off next year's spooky season.
We're doing some big stuff. The horror genre is like on the come up right
yes.
now, because we're entering this sweet spot where nostalgia is being crossed with a renaissance in Slasherville, is being crossed with legitimate fans who are awesome filmmakers. So you have this stew going, and now you add to it the thespians that are award caliber winners. Bill Hader just won the Emmy
right.
for lead in a series. Jessica Chastain has been nominated for Academy Award. Like, there's something special going on in the world of horror right now that it might just blow up at the seams. And the It money that we saw from last year, that may be across a couple franchises now. We're seeing it with Halloween. We just talked about it at the top of the show.
Speaking of big money horror franchises, the Conjuring universe, Patrick Wilson, Vera Farmiga, they're going to be in the next Annabelle film.
Really?
And that was big news last week. I forgot to write it in here, but
that
was big news last week. So now this summer, we're getting Annabelle, and we're getting the Warrens in that movie. That's kind of cool. I like that they can jump franchises now.
I do too. We did a 3-episode arc about the Conjuring universe, the Warren Cinematic Universe.
We kicked off spooky season in September with that.
There's so many hidden highlights in that, just from a filmmaking and a box office standpoint.
That was a blast.
It totally all credit in the world to not only James Wan, but the actors involved in that whole studio. Something special going on with all these franchises.
So,
I really love it.
Yeah, a bunch of upcoming horror movies here. Night of the Comet is getting remade by Southbound director Roxanne Benjamin. She fired some shots at Blumhouse for not employing female filmmakers.
Good.
Throughout this announcement, we think she's right. She said the list of great female filmmakers, of established female filmmakers, is quote unquote, long as fuck.
It was unbelievable that Jason Blum came out and said that women don't want to make horror movies. He retracted his statement, as he should have. He apologized for it. But I was on Twitter. I learned a list of movies, horror movies, that had been done and directed by female auteurs. That's a ridiculous notion. Of course there's females that are capable of handling horror movies.
You can search IMDb for a few minutes.
Just a joke. And good for him for getting on top of it and retracting the statement. But
one of my favorite horror
ridiculous.
Movies of all time, Mary Harron's American Psycho.
Jennifer's Body is so underrated.
Diablo Cody.
So underrated, yeah.
I agree. So, Mike, LeBron James.
LeBron James putting on that Jason mask in a couple Instagram posts, and he's the whole reason he went out to L.A., everyone postulates and theorizes, is that he really wants to get his hand in this production company that he's been building pretty much since he came into the NBA and came into money, and now he wants to do the Friday the 13th remake. He's been tweeting out photos of him in the Jason mask. What do we think about this? LeBron James, the star of Space Jam 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun because he already had a movie that would probably be a hit built into his new production company and the move to L.A.
Yes.
We were saying this, everybody was saying this, Bill Simmons and company.
Mm-hmm.
It made so much sense for him to go to the Lakers, whether other stars went with him.
It's not
or
about
not.
Basketball. Yeah.
Spring Hill Entertainment is his production company. And yeah, for him to buy a project like this, now I wonder how much he would have to pay up front for it.
Well, now, especially now. On the heels of Halloween doing so well.
It's not like you can just buy a cheap property and put out a movie that's guaranteed to make money.
Yeah, we're not getting the script for Argo here, you know, back in the 70s.
This is not like a Blumhouse-style production,
right.
Is it?
And there's money in this franchise, there's money in the slasher genre. I just talked about that. There's money. Whoever owns, is it New Line, I think? I'm not sure who sits on the Friday the 13th license right now, but whoever owns that is... I think they know they have a moneymaker. They tried remaking it recently, back in 2010, I want to say. Huge flop.
Right.
But also, those were kind of the doldrums of horror. We were just working our way out of the House of Wax remakes and all those money grab remakes.
That was too CGI, yeah. I think I remember seeing that one.
Not really.
Rooney Mara.
Underground Lair for Jason. It wasn't Jason.
Rooney Mara's too good of an actress.
Yes, true. For that type of thing, yes. But so, it'd be interesting... I don't know about LeBron James' film prowess.
We don't know yet.
Yeah, so sure, why not? It'd be cool if he played Jason. That dude's jacked.
That would be cool. LeBron's not a terrible actor, too, as we've seen in the Trainwreck.
Yeah, he was great in Trainwreck. Yeah. He's going to be in Space Jam 2, like we said. So we'll see. Keep your eye on that one. As far as old school horror icons, Robert Englund may want to don the Freddy makeup one more time, as this just comes off the heels of playing Freddy Krueger for the first time in years for an episode of the Goldbergs, the Halloween episode. He said he had so much fun with the role that he's now game to do another movie, which he had previously said he was done with. He would never do Freddy again. Funny how times change.
So the first film is pretty strong. I'm not a huge fan of this franchise. I saw it late. I saw it like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and I just watched the first film, and then I watched the second one. The second one was awful. Like, is there a bunch of good Freddy movies that I'm missing, Mike? New Nightmare,
Nightmare. If New Nightmare came out in 92 and it was so meta in its delivery and so such an overachieving film, I think it kind of got lost in the shuffle. But I've been on the record. If New Nightmare came out in 2018, 2017, 16, when we're having this kind of renaissance, I think it'd be considered a modern day classic because it's so over the top. So, but again, that was Wes Craven coming back to the series. He took the helm there. He's obviously, God rest his soul, passed on. So, I think you need to find a capable filmmaker. I think you need to find a David Gordon Green who grew up on Nightmare on Elm Street and was in love with the product from the beginning and knows how to respectfully handle the fans attached to it. But sure, I'll see Robert Englund don the claws one more time.
Well, I'm intrigued, I'll tell you that much, and I would be super intrigued to see a LeBron James production company go after it.
So, why not? Yeah.
Speaking of new horror movies here and remakes, Killer Clowns from Outer Space and Critters movies are in the works by Sci-Fi. I've never seen the Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Mike, have you seen it?
I don't think I've seen either of these.
I've seen Critters, which is awesomely bad and kind of cool.
Okay.
So I like that one.
All I remember from the old all I remember from the old Critters is that the smiling face of the demon there.
Yeah.
And I always thought, he's pretty cute. As he rips someone's
head
open.
When I heard it originally, I'm like, no, wait, I'm thinking of Tremors. Right, with
the
sand.
Underground.
No,
yeah.
But then I remember watching I loved it because it was all at one house, like one shed.
Oh, okay.
Big woodshed of a house, and those critters, just the aliens kept attacking the family.
Is it one of those movies that you're rooting for the critters?
I don't remember. I just remember it being awesomely bad.
All right.
Now, I think you're kind of rooting for somebody because it's like kids and.
Carrie's a 6.0 on IMDb for an 80s horror movie. That's not bad.
Maybe we'll have to retrospective on it if the new one comes out. So the Bird Box trailer, Michael.
I don't know if I like this or if I'm a fan of it. You've read the book, you know what it's about. This is coming out to Netflix, I think December 12th is the release date. They just dropped the trailer yesterday or a couple days ago by the time you're listening to
Suzanne Bier love her work. She's done a lot of great stuff, including Brothers, a lot of great foreign films. Stars Sarah Paulson, Rosa Salazar, and of course Sandra Bullock. Just a loaded cast. John Malkovich, BD Wong.
John Malkovich.
Tom Hollander, Jackie Weaver, Lil Rel. I mean, this is loaded.
And it's like the opposite of A Quiet Place.
It's the opposite of A Quiet Place. Here's the premise. A woman and a pair of children are blindfolded and make their way through a dystopian setting along a river because there are monsters that if you make eye contact with them, they will enact your wildest fears.
Yeah.
And basically, it's opposite of A Quiet Place, where if they hear you, if you see them, you're going to get put under their spell.
They manifest themselves in your craziest fears. I don't understand how this is going to work.
It worked in an audiobook form. I love the book. I read this book a while back, and it was a crazy audio listen. It was suspenseful. I wasn't really that scary, but it was super duper suspenseful.
Okay.
And it was one of those Walking Dead things where you're just as worried about the people as you are about the monsters, and I love that fact about
it. Sure.
So there's going to be a lot of crazy people in this story.
I can see where it lends itself to horror if we have, like, the first-person POV where someone's raising their blindfold and something scary is there. Like, I could see the jump scares, how it can do that.
But
I don't understand. They're rowing a boat down a river
with blindfolded.
I don't get it.
If the monster is, like, next to them for the whole movie, it might be hilarious. Right? I don't know how this works.
Waiting for them to open up.
Yeah, just, and they're doing goofy ass shit.
Still here.
And the monster's just like right behind him. Come on, pull up. That would be great.
That would be funny. Right? Also make it a comedy.
It could be a comedy. Well, the same way A Quiet Place could have been a comedy if somebody farted. Now, we made that joke too often. So maybe it'll work out just like A Quiet Place. It's getting fringe Oscar buzz, or at least when people were saying which Netflix movie is going to be up for an Oscar, they were saying Bird Box.
I will say the preview is certainly, you can't help but be drawn to want to see the movie.
It's not terrible.
No,
right.
I mean, there's a lot of intrigue and a lot of questions, obviously. So we'll see what it has in store. And Sandra Bullock being attached, not a Sandra Bullock movie.
True.
Typically, anyway.
Yeah, no, she's trying to cash in on this horror movie fad.
Come on in. Yeah, let's go.
It's not a fad. So another trailer we really liked was Escape Room. We saw this in theaters before Halloween. The premise reads, six strangers find themselves in circumstances beyond their control and must use their wits to survive. That's not a great premise. That doesn't help us.
Downright bad premise. But yeah, it's like the escape room that you pay money to comes to life, and basically it's life or death.
It's a night out with the girlfriend and several couple. That's a couple's night out, right?
Right, right.
And we saw this in Game Night being parodied, which was fun and funny, where they're all trying to get out of this room, and it's part of their whatever the
right. And this is theme. Not the horror flip of that. The only thing I can think about, like, imagine owning a franchised game room in real life and seeing this trailer in the movies, and fuck! it's gonna hurt the business.
Honey, I thought they forgot Saw. Well, now there's another Saw.
Yeah, right. That's my only thought about this movie.
A couple owns this escape room business, in my analogy.
Yes, yes. So, same here. Yes, very good.
Here's a trailer we liked, though. We liked that trailer, too.
We
escape
did.
Room.
We surprised.
We liked Happy Death Day to You trailer.
I was so giddy with this. I didn't know they were doing this. I didn't know there was a sequel in the works. That first Happy Death Day, Blumhouse is just
really good.
They do whatever they want, and it's just a success. But yeah, which is why I was surprised Truth or Dare was kind of a flop. But the first Happy Death Day was really good.
Groundhog Day as a horror movie.
I don't understand how it lends itself to a sequel, but it's in Blumhouse's hands, and if anyone can pull it off, I'm very interested to see it.
They basically, like, tell you how in the trailer, though. I mean, they give us the explanation, and we're like, okay. And she's still living the same day.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the same movie. So, all right.
No, it's kind of fun. And
it is.
It's kind of funny. And then she's like freaked out about it. So I'm in. I don't know if I love the suicide montage. It's like the Groundhog Day thing.
I think it's funny if you look at it like a reset and not a suicide.
I know. It's just a little much. We've just seen
I get it.
How many big movies with suicides in it?
Jessica Roth, I love her playing that role. I thought she was really good in the first one. Excited to see her back in the second one. Obviously going to see it. Very I'm a sucker for Blumhouse right now.
So last couple stories here, Michael. We have a quote-unquote blood list, which is a list of unproduced horror screenplays going around Hollywood being put and broadcasted on the trades. This is awesome. I love that we're in an industry now where horror movies get some credit like this, to the point where they're being pushed by third parties and parties that are trying to exhibit all these unproduced screenplays for everyone to buy and purchase.
It's funny, too, how it's so niche. Like, there's the infamous blacklist in Hollywood, how everyone has these screenplays that they just are waiting for somebody to pick up and put into development and put into production. And now there's a whole junk of this, I guess, as the Hollywood Reporter reported on and showed us, of just horror scripts. So let's play personal. I think it's really funny. Let's play personal PR for these scripts right now, really quickly. What do you, if you had to pick one of that list, which one would you promote to your studio?
The Broodmare, with the one about a man
son of a bitch
with his fiance to right his wrongs at his ex-girlfriend's horse ranch.
God damn it.
Sinister happenings at his horse ranch.
Do you have any actual feelings of joy about that, or are you just doing this to spite me?
I kind of like it. It's so bizarre. It's Broodmare sounds like an evil thing.
It does.
It's not an evil thing.
It does.
So I love that. I also like that a cop is in a time warp in The Wake, which is a pilot script.
Yeah, that kind of lends itself more to the sci-fi genre, too. You can get a couple
fans. Unexpected ties to the most notorious missing person case ever. That's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, I don't mind that. For me, I was torn between Last Will and Testament of Charles Abernathy, because I love the ensemble mystery horror films where you're spending the entirety of the movie being like, it's that guy. Oh, it's that guy. It's this guy.
It's every guy.
Just what I imagine that would be. And this one seems like a textbook case crossed over with The Haunting. And the other one I like was 29 Mole Street, which says it's in production currently with Baslevs. Sorry if I get that wrong. So maybe we'll see it soon. Seems like it could easily be an issue movie, become culturally relevant while also being a fantastic horror concept. And we've seen lately when that's handled properly, it is a big deal. Baslevs, by the way, had a hand in producing both The Searching and Unfriended Dark Web.
They're doing all the screen life.
This
movies,
could be a screen life genre. We'll see what happens. But those are the two that I would pick. So let's go for some rapid fire stuff to end on here, Michael.
Yeah, Labyrinth sequel script finished for Fede Alvarez. This was reported this morning. Could they recast Bowie? Will Jennifer Connelly return? Fede Alvarez says it's a direct continuation of the first film. He is still attached and excited to do it. Were you a huge fan of the original there, Mike?
I
know it's more fantasy than horror, but
yeah, and fantasy is always tough for me, but I wasn't crazy about it, but I understand the fervor that it causes in people and how some people hold it so near and dear. And due to that, I feel like this is like remaking The Goonies, or another thing that I'm not crazy about, but I know people go gaga over. Do we need to remake Labyrinth? Like, David Bowie was the Goblin King. That's what he is.
They should have done it 20 years ago. They should have done
think so?
15 years ago if they were going to do it when Bowie was still alive. I mean, now they're kind of screwed.
I just don't think we need to do it at all. Like, let sleeping dogs lie sometimes. Why soil the name of what
it's
the first
all getting
one was?
Remade. Speaking of remakes, Mandy 2, Panos Cosmatos, the director of Mandy 1 there, is saying that he has an idea for Nicolas Cage fighting Nazi punks.
Can we just have Nicolas Cage just fighting random groups of awfulness every whatever these Mandy series are? Like, we'll get the Nazis, we'll get a couple biker gangs, maybe some people trying to get kids hooked on drugs. Right. What I want is for Nicolas Cage to be G.I. Joe is what I'm saying.
I'm not against this at all. Even though I'm not the biggest fan of Mandy, we reviewed the trailer back when we did a data on it.
Yes.
I liked a lot of things about it. I love Nicolas Cage in the movie. I had quibbles with the story. I'll just tell you folks. So if you hate me for it, then I'd be honest. I always said I'll be honest. I'm going to be honest. But we didn't review it because I didn't love it. And if I don't love it, that means I hate it? No, of course not. It means I give it a solid B. It's all B all day. Liked it. Love Nicolas Cage. This movie makes no sense to be called Mandy 2, number one.
Mandy 2.
Because
the Mandir.
Cage is not named Mandy. The person who is named Mandy is in Mandy 1 and can't be in Mandy 2. If you know the premise of Mandy 1, you know what I mean.
Maybe he names his dog. Maybe it's just a John Wick knockoff now.
He just names random people Mandy. He calls everybody Mandy.
Like at the grocery store. These bananas are now Mandy.
However, Cheddar Goblins, I'm in for that. That was like a highlight of the movie too. So I loved a lot of things, but I don't think the story can work unless they totally go hog and they call it somebody else. They call it something else as a title.
Why don't they just call it Nick? Just drop all pretense and have Nick Cage.
Nicolas Cage versus Nazis.
Yes, exactly.
I would
Who's
see
not
that.
Seeing that?
Directed by Panos Cosmatos.
I'm
I would
in.
See that. Mike, Monster Hunter video game adaptation with Resident Evil crew and the cast with Mila Jovovich. You know, Paul W.S. Anderson is back there. We got some cool-ass stills. We got T.I. We have Tony Jaa. We got a good cast.
This is going to shock you, but I'm a fan of the Resident Evil movie series.
Weirdly. Like, they're almost comforting watches because you know they're dumb.
Yes.
Like the Alien versus Predator. You know it's dumb.
Yeah.
But it's good.
I also don't think it has really any relation to what goes on in the video games. I've only played a couple of Resident Evils, but the movies are not really that related at all, except that there's Alice and an Umbrella Corporation. But yeah, whatever, I'm in. I've never been a Monster Hunter guy for the video game series, so I don't know what's in store there, but I like Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, Mila Jovovich is going to fight, you know, humongous monsters, correct?
She's made a career about that, so why not?
I'm in.
Yeah. That's it. Have Mila Jovovich fight Nazis with Nick Cage.
Yes. And she could be Mandy.
Yes. But I'm Mila. No, you're Mandy now.
You're also, by the way, I'm going to call you Mandy too. We're such dorks.
T-O-O.
Look, if you came to us from all the horror, from all our horror pods, we are such dorks.
Yes, yes. And that's what makes us qualified to review not only horror movies, but also the Oscar movies, as we've done recently with various movies such as First Man, A Star Is Born, Three Identical Strangers. And once we get past the Halloween date, we're going to be doing more intensive Oscar stuff as we make award season year-round. But until then, this horror hot takes, this news cycle, and we have one more surprise for you coming up on the date of Halloween itself. If you want to reach out to us, we'd love to hear from you. You can get to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We're also on TuneIn, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes.
Yeah, leave us a review if you could. Please. That'll really help us grow the thing organically.
Love, and we'll give you a shout out. You leave us a review if we can let us know. We'll definitely shout you out in either our mentions or on the show here. 6 Degrees of MMO is something we want to keep our tabs on.
Jamie Lee Curtis to Mike Myers. It's a 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon inspired game. Go have fun on IMDb. Send us your responses. We'll read the winners on the air. We're going to start doing that more of on a weekly basis, but probably by the end of next week, middle of next week. You know, listen for the winners.
Yeah, and we also have a bit of a change coming up. So in programming, and we're going to tease that for a couple weeks now, and you'll get news about that soon enough. So on this date, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, Michael. Final words of wisdom here.
We're dorks, but sure, our takes are hot.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Fresh out the oven.
Yes.
Freshly baked hot takes.
See ya
later.